This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, bro. You see, the song in the background is the sound of what South African creativity merged with the international competitiveness, right? Sounds like. This song played at the Versace Spring Summer 2019 menswear collection by the legendary Donatella Versace. But obviously we are excited because this song is from our very own Faga. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Youth Leadership Platform. You are chilling with your host, Bongani Tau, at Simply Bongani across all social media platforms. Guys, we've gone international with GOM because of Faga. Wearing Versace head to toe, front row seat, backstage access, the works. And they join us live from Berlin. Yeah, that's how we do it. Exclusives, exclusives, exclusives. It's the Youth Leadership Platform, so we look at the youth that are doing amazing things. Let's welcome them to studio. Fela Gucci. Hey, how's it, man?
Hello. Good, thanks, and how are you?
Awesome, awesome. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
You're doing the entire nation proud. Like, I'm so inspired and jealous at the same time. Like, how do you sit front row, Versace, get your song played? How did this come about?
Sorry, can you repeat that? I didn't hear you.
So how did this collaboration with the Donatella Versace come about?
I think they somehow discovered our music and they approached us. And we spoke to them and that's basically how the collaboration happened.
Shucks. When you started the movement, because I'm of a mind that it was only individual reimagination of the queer culture within the South African context, you know, shooting content, putting stuff on Instagram and other social media platforms and other really platforms that are out there. Looking back from where you started to, you know, the traction you're getting, the exposure you're getting, you know, the international nod as well that you're getting, does it feel fulfilling?
I mean, it definitely is affirming. We can say that. I think what's more fulfilling for us is if we stay true to what we always wanted to achieve.
Sure.
And I think what we always wanted to achieve was to inspire young Black queer Africans to be themselves and to sort of not be afraid to explore their true identity. So if all of the things that we're doing achieve that, then we definitely fulfill.
Oh, wow. Okay. Where are you when you get the email or get, you know, this request to use your song and to have you at the show?
Are you asking where we were?
Yeah, where were you?
We were in Berlin.
Already?
Yeah.
and so take us through the emotions and your reaction and what was happening in the moment when you got the request.
It was a gag. We were like literally just chilling online and then like the email came through and we were just like shit.
What just happened?
Yeah, very good.
And you know what I find very interesting is that I was doing a read up on Vogue, you know, the article that you did with Vogue, and you made reference to the 90s high-waisted Versace pants, and I'm like, how poetic that was your inspiration at some point, and then, you know, things just came together like that.
Yeah, it's so crazy because the pants I was wearing looked similar to a pair of bootleg Versace pants that my aunt used to own like back in the 90s. So yeah, pretty wild.
So what does this mean for the duo going forward?
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, it's all just we haven't actually had much time to sort of process all of this because it literally happened in the space of like 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're definitely carrying on and definitely aiming for bigger things and sure that we'll attract much bigger things and hoping to maybe capitalize on the respect that this has gained us in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And just push the agenda forward.
Shucks, boom, at Versace in Milan, man. And from Milan, like, oh, those yeah. different elements coming together. So from Milan, you went to France, and then France to Berlin. So you're doing a whole European tour then, I gather?
Yeah, yeah.
What's the point of it all at this point?
Well, it's a European tour promoting our music, so we're performing at different festivals, mostly dealing with experimental and electronic music. And we're playing in the UK this week and the next week in other cities around Europe. And that's quite curious.
Really?
Yeah.
Slaying all the way to the international front. So tell me this, are we going to see any more collaborations between yourselves and Donatella?
We hope so.
Come on.
You'll see, maybe.
No, you guys are living the life. Thank you so much for coming on to YLP. We will continue this conversation when you come back to South Africa, and I gather it's July 17th?
That's correct.
Okay, so you owe us an interview from then. So we're going to look at everything that happened after that big moment that had everyone so proud. Like, everyone's Instagram story last night was Gom in Milan to Versace Spring Summer 2019. Guys, I'm super proud of you, and all the best with the rest of the tour, yeah?
Thank you.
Awesome, thank you. Awesome. Well, that was Faga. A movement, really, that was started by Fela Gucci and Desire, all in the name of, you know, as an archival platform that looks at the black queer culture in South Africa. And it was very fitting. You know, it was a good marriage between what Donatella was doing with Versace, experimenting with a different form and kind of masculinity, or redefining masculinity, really, which is what Faga has been doing for, you know, for as long as they've existed. And it's quite exciting for Donatella to give, you know, South African music, the culture, and our very own Faga the nod, the international nod that we desperately need.
This is CliffCentral.com.
And just like that, we switch it up and we bring you just another exciting and powerful guest to the Youth Leadership Platform. She hails from Limpopo.
The luxurious villages of Limpopo province.
Where all the rich ground is, you know, given all the fruit and vegetables that we get from there that are rich and get us full, I guess. She's done some amazing things. You've done some amazing things.
Yeah.
And you came to prominence from your feature with OK Malum Koket.
Yeah.
Just prior to that, and before we even get into that, ladies and gentlemen, and to everyone that's listening to the podcast, we are joined by the awesome, colorful, breath of fresh air, Shaw Majozi.
Yay!
Welcome to the studio.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for inviting me. I feel good to be here once again.
Awesome. So just on that, right before you did the song with OK Malum Koket,
yeah.
Let's backtrack a bit and talk about your childhood self. What was your biggest dream growing up as a young girl?
I wanted to be president of the country.
Mm-hmm. What informed that?
I guess I wanted to kind of influence the kind of change that I wanted to see. I grew up in a family that was very politically active, and then moved to like my family, at least my father, moved to doing like humanitarian work, so working with, you know, NGOs, etc., and working on land issues, etc., before Bring Back the Land was like trending, you know.
Before it was a thing.
Yeah, my dad was already working on that. So I worked as well on some land issues in collaboration with the Legal Resources Center, who basically stands up for people's rights for free. So if like communities are maybe being abused by, let's say, like a mine, or if they are being unfairly treated with the land redistribution process, then that organization would help. So I worked there, and then I realized that the biggest thing standing in the way of people achieving their liberation, I think, and full equality was actually the government.
Okay.
Like, I felt that that was who stood in our way most of the time. We hardly came into contact with like white landowners, for instance. Like, people talk about the land issue and they just think it's like white people literally standing there and stopping black people from having the land. For the most part, it's black people within government that are like corrupt in terms of like not giving people back the land that even white people. So there's places where the government has actually purchased land for communities but won't give it to those communities and is actually making money from that. And that's what I saw more than anything. So I thought, why aren't good people in government? Why are all the good people outside of government shouting at government instead of being inside it? And so I decided I was going to be president.
So you've always been woke before woke was a thing?
Definitely. I'm an insomniac.
And you, what do you spend a lot of that time doing when you're not sleeping?
No, I just meant I'm very, very woke. I sleep very well at night. So, but, you know, I do spend a lot of time thinking about those issues. But what really surprised me is the fact that being Shoma Josie and having that platform has actually given me more space to be able to do everything that I wanted to do before. Because you actually just have more of a voice. You know?
And in Senegal, the US, were some of the travels that you had to do. What are some of the highlights from moving through those different spaces and stuff that you learned?
Highlights? I don't know. Every day I would try to make it a highlight. Every day I tried to do something that I thought was exciting and interesting. And especially at that time, I was a completely free person. I had nobody that I was like answering to. I was completely unemployed. I just did enough work that I wouldn't starve. And then the rest of that time, I just been wandering around West Africa and just exploring and learning the languages. So I was pretty free, and I think that was probably the biggest highlight, was like having time to just think and write and discover and think about what I wanted to do. Yeah.
And then how did it change to music from wanting to become the president?
Well, then I worked at a political campaign agency, and we worked on a couple of presidential campaigns
in Tanzania.
In Tanzania and elsewhere. Tanzania is just one of the places that we happened to work. And I kind of saw that that's not the personality that I have. I just thought that I'm not well suited for that, because you have to be very disciplined in like to be a presidential candidate. Although someone like Trump has completely thrown all of that away, but traditionally, you know, but traditionally you would have to have a pretty clean history so that even when you became a candidate, people couldn't look back and say, ah, she did this ratchet stuff. Because Mina, there'd be too much of that. And also I realized I don't want to live my life so that I have a clean kind of like record when I'm 40. I want to live my life for now.
Okay. Interesting. Now, at this point, you are studying creative writing.
Yeah.
In the creative arts, and now what's the inspiration behind that? What do you want to use that for?
Creative writing. I felt like, you know, the thing is, being in politics, you can do political studies, but it's very rare that someone who studies that then goes on to be a politician. People study other things, and I thought it's good to know how to like speak and write and present ideas and stuff. And it's also something that I've always been good at. And it's something that I almost think it was like meant to be in a way. My parents named me after a writer.
D. Maya?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they named me that and then fed me books for the for every year of my life, for birthdays and Christmas. I got books as gifts, you know. So I was reading a lot and then writing a lot and then obviously doing a lot of poetry. And then, so, you know, writing kind of felt like the natural thing that I would do.
And now when you write, what informs the writing process?
I think I mostly write from a position of like frustration.
Okay.
To be honest, when I write poetry anyways, and from a position of wanting to clear things up in my own mind, from the perspective of trying to explain social injustice to other people, because sometimes just like facts don't really sink into people. You might think that like, oh, bare facts is actually what would be more impactful. Sometimes sure. the emotional story that poetry tells has a bigger impact on people and understanding what those issues are. So it always came from that perspective, and that's why I kind of needed Choma Jozi to kind of address the other side of me, which is the less serious side, and it's the side that, like, I mean, I party a lot, you know, that's, and like,
you're full of energy. I mean,
yeah,
with all of the performances I've attended where you were performing, yeah. it was so electrifying. Like, I'm not even saying this just to flatter you, but like genuinely so.
Yeah we do a lot on stage, and I felt that it's such a small part of my life, which is where I'm thinking about, like, let's say, all the issues that we've just spoken about now. The most of my life is spent eating my youth, you know, and, like, having a good time. So I thought that's not a balanced, like, view of me, just the poetry side.
Mm-hmm.
So the Choma Jozi thing helps me also to kind of release the other energy that I have.
What's the biggest lesson you've learned from Maya Angelou herself?
Oh my goodness, to talk about stuff, that there's no shame in talking about things.
Okay.
There are things that are, like, for instance, me and my cousins, when I was growing up, we used to play house, and we used to be like, oh, let's do what mommy and daddy do and whatever, and like hump each other and stuff. And I remember feeling such guilt about that, and feeling like I'm the only person in the world, and I'm
that dirty, yeah.
And I'm terrible. And then I read in Maya Angelou's biography where she talks about doing that as well, and I'm like, so she can write it about it in a book, that means it's like, actually there's no shame. Like, people should not be feeling shame for being human and like for those kind of experiences. So she really, really helped me to open my mouth. I think I was also very quiet when I was younger. I was extremely, extremely quiet, extremely shy. A very serious child.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah, and so she kind of taught me to have like a voice and to like use my voice. And that thing of not having shame is huge, because I think in a lot of Black families, there's a huge thing of like, you don't talk about things.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I think a lot of bad things happen within these families that never actually get addressed. Like, you still spend holidays and stuff with uncles that have done unspeakable things because they are unspoken.
Yeah. It's unaddressed, and there's a lot of emotion still kept.
Yeah.
There's rage that's looming in the household. Yeah. If anything thing, wants to happen, pops.
Exactly. So that was a big lesson from Maya Angelou. It's like, speak about yourself and stop like feeling so guilty about, you know, being a human being.
Has your relationship then with your parents and just older people within the family changed over the years, now that you're aware of, you know, such things of not talking about things and just sweeping stuff under the rug?
I've definitely, the whole Choma Jozi experiment has been very... it has, for me, it has been a huge liberation in many ways. You would think that my being more like political and outspoken in my poetry would have done that, but no, it's actually me being able to be a carefree Black girl saying, I'll do this and I'll wear however I want to wear, and I'll drink and I'll flirt and whatever, you know, and no one can tell me not to, like, no one can, like, make me feel ashamed, or because, you know, I'm from a village, so in my village it's either like you're a church goer or you're like a drinker. There's no in between. Sure. There's no like a person that indulges in a beer once and then, but also is a good person. There's such a thing. It's like you, and so it's very like, it was hard, I think. Like, people maybe in cities and now, like, you know, in the spaces that I exist in now, wouldn't see it as a big thing. But for a lot of young people also in Limpopo, it was a hugely liberating thing to also hear a woman, a young woman, saying, like, yo, I'm, like, XYZ. And also, like, just being blatantly like, listen, a boy can't tell me anything. Like, you know, and I'll do and behave as I want. That, for me, was very freeing. I come from a very, 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 very religious family.
Okay.
That, again, a lot of things were not allowed and a lot of things were not said. So it was also a rebellion kind of against that. And I think I managed to establish that, saying, like, you know, this is who I am actually, and stop kind of hiding behind, you know, whatever it is, and like being my true self. Sure. when I leave there, and then when I go to the village, I'm like, you know, wearing skirts and stuff. I'm like, I can't be that.
So how did your parents though take to that? You know, sort of, for lack of a better word, coming out.
My dad was cool, mm-hmm. and still is. My dad's like one of my biggest supporters.
Okay.
My mom, it took her a little bit to, I think she was probably embarrassed of me and what people at church would say,
mm-hmm.
about her daughter singing about like alcohol and things like that, and like boys, making out with boys and stuff. And, but eventually she saw that, it really is just who I am, and I'm also like, I'm completely harmless.
Yeah.
Know? I feel like within like very religious groups, that's where the most harm comes from. Meaning I'm the kind of person who's saying like, I'm living my best life, try to live yours.
Sure, sure.
Whereas a lot of the people in those circles are so judgmental, you know. I'm not hurting anybody, you know. I'm not like, all I'm saying is this is who I am, and like, I love the fact that a lot of people are taking inspiration from that and feeling liberated by that. But I'm not like judging other people and whatever. So I think eventually they saw that it's harmless. Plus also like, I'm famous now. So I think that's like, I think that's fun for
it's
them like, as
it's
well.
It's okay, my child. It's okay. It's okay.
I think it's fun. But like, my relationship with my mom has improved, and I think she's become more like, okay, well, before I'm a pastor, I'm your mother.
Yeah.
As well.
Okay.
So I think she's become more accepting. So it's improved a bit.
It's crazy the role of religion within society and the forming of society and some of the stringent rules that it imposes on people.
I mean,
belief and conviction are very relative things, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had a gospel singer call me today saying, like, can we do a song? I was like, it could never be me. Like, that could literally never be me. I know, I won't say. Ah. But but I've received so much judgment and hatred from the church community that I would never do that. And you will never, I do not want to do a benefit concert for a church. I do not want anything. I mean, I got a tiny tattoo on the back of my neck, and then like everyone was praying for me and judging me and like throwing fire at me. Oh, fire, fire, whatever. Like I was demonic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, I got possessed. A nose piercing, and then that was like, oh, it's like I'm possessed.
She's
or whatever.
Gone now.
Yeah. Mm. My brother had dreadlocks. They made him cut the dreads. Like, all sorts of things, you know, and just the crazy amounts of judgment about like sexuality and all these things. I mean, it could just never be me.
Are you a spiritual person though?
No.
Not at all?
Nah.
Between Maya and Shoma Josie, are there a lot of differences or?
No, it's me. It's just that I'm able to express specific parts of Maya by, you know, using the Shoma Josie kind of, yeah, name and character.
And, you know, the platform, I guess, that it gives you,
But I'm also finding that it's way more broad than one would expect. Like, people think, like, stuff that's more intellectual, like maybe, let's say, poetry and, like, other writing activities that I've done, that would be broader and somehow it'd be more, like, complex or whatever. I'm finding the Shoma Josie persona is way more complex and broad than any other thing that I've ever done. It's allowing me to do the humanitarian work that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's allowing me to like spread the messages that I want to spread, and like to a much, much bigger audience.
Yes.
It's fantastic.
Yes, because of the following, I mean, and the clout you've garnered.
Yeah.
I guess over the past couple of years.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And like, well, not even a couple of years. I've been doing this for a year and a half.
Imagine. And you're already doing the Rain Queen. Such big collaborations already.
We're trying our best. I think, yeah.
So do you think it's your authenticity to who you are and where you come from that's gotten a lot of brands wanting to collaborate with you? Because I guess it's something in obviously, inverted commas, different from what's already going on. People trying to copy, you know, America and some of the other Western countries.
Probably. I think everyone right now is hungry for something fresh and different. I feel countries like the US, the UK, whatever, like Europe, that they've passed their peak, that they've peaked and now they're kind of out of ideas. That's what I feel.
I mean, Jay-Z and Beyonce, that Toki, Bowiki,
exactly,
inspiration.
Exactly, from Senegal, yeah.
They just
sampled. But that's everybody.
A different artist now. and didn't mention. But yeah, you were saying?
Because even both Kendrick Lamar and them in their music videos, I mean, they're sampling African artists. Everyone's doing African stuff in their videos. Everyone's doing the Guara Guara. Everyone's doing the Shaku. You know, it's like everyone's looking to Africa because I feel like we are that place that still has this creativity. So, like, what a shame for us to be running away from the very thing that everyone else wants, you know? And it's like, I mean, the rest of the world must be looking at us like, what? Are these people crazy? Like, running to try and do what we've done already. When they have such a wealth of knowledge. I mean, if you look at Black Americans, right? They've managed to build an amazing culture from having so little to take from. I can believe they were completely, like, disrupted, rooted out violently and stuff, taken to the U.S. and, like, their history erased and everything. We have a long history to draw from. There's stuff where, like, you know, in my family, you can go back like 11, 12 generations, just naming like who's there from the days of like when they left Mozambique, from the days of like from even going from further north than that, you know. So we have such a wealth of experiences, history, culture, so deep. It's something that people really like. Envy, and yet we try and like run away from it. I went to the other side and saw, these people are not as cool as we think. They've actually like, so it's actually, I went and then I came back, I was like, listen, forget what they're trying to do. This, like, we are the future.
It's interesting that you'd mention that because I wanted to ask, what is identity to you?
What do you mean?
Like, how would you define identity?
I have no idea what this means. You're literally, I mean...
Maybe let me personalize it.
Yeah.
What is your identity?
Okay, so maybe let's start with the basics. I'm a woman.
Okay.
I'm very comfortable with that role. I am Tsonga speaking. I am biracial. I would say I'm African.
Okay.
I would say in particular I'm South African. I'm a creative. I'm a writer and a rapper.
Okay.
I don't know if you wanted me to go deeper than that.
Well, you can.
No,
sure,
I don't know, because I don't know what, like, I don't usually understand these kind of questions. Like, what does it mean? Like, what do you, because there's so many things I could say.
Well, I had a conversation with Nakani not so long ago.
Yeah.
And when I kind of...
I love him, by the way.
Who doesn't?
Such a dream.
I mean, he's exceptional. Like, his art, his critique on, you know, the social culture of, or the pop culture and urban culture of South Africa is just amazing, you know?
I bumped into him in London. And
oh, really?
Yeah, it was actually amazing.
We were going to get into that. When I asked him somewhat the same question, he told me about how... what he thinks identity is, it's a performance, right?
Mm.
Because when you look at history, at some point, it cuts. And someone dictated certain things about who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the years, people have been trying to build on that, right? You know, colonialism and the effect it played as well in what we identify with. So I guess he was explaining as well, you know, his gender... classification, so to speak, that why does any of these things matter? Because it's all a performance. So that's the perspective and point of view where I was coming from.
Okay.
At some point as well, Brahu said that if we do not preserve our history, there will come a point in time where our children's children will say we used to be African.
Mm.
With the show Majozi persona, performer, that has come to life. Is that what you are trying to do?
Thing is, I am African. I don't feel like I have to perform African. I don't feel like I have to dress up African.
Sure.
I feel like I simply just need to be. So I reject both ends of the spectrum. I reject the people that feel like to be a modern day whatever.
Sure.
You would have to basically get rid of anything African about you, right? Which is kind of the direction we were going.
Sure. Which is very colonial.
Of course. Yeah. So it's like, what does it mean to be like someone of my age today, it would mean like everything about you is as far away from your Africanness as possible. So you would wear nothing that any of your ancestors wore. You would probably change the way that your hair naturally grows out of your scalp. You would speak in a language that none of your grandmothers or great-grandmothers spoke. That's kind of what it means to be a modern person today, right?
Sure.
I reject that. I also reject, though, the notion that to be an African person today means sticking to what my grandmother did 60, 70 years ago.
Okay.
Or sticking to whatever we were when colonialism began. Because I agree with the notion of saying, like, it's almost like African culture froze at some point. So I disagree with both. And I'm somewhere in between, which is that I obviously am African, but that doesn't mean that I have to be some archaic version of Africanness.
Oh, yes.
I want to be an African that is now. I want to be a globalized African. I believe that we would have globalized anyway. We would have been immersed into the world culture. Anyway, regardless of colonialism. So that's why I completely think like Helen Ziller is completely idiotic when she says that, like, you know,
colonialism brought
these positives. I think those things would have come, but they would have not come at the expense of Africanness. They would have embraced Africanness. And what we consider global culture would have taken the best ideas from every culture globally and put them together into one if it had happened organically. But it hasn't. It happened in a powerful, like, versus the weak kind of violent way. In which other cultures were erased and one culture was adopted not because it was better, but because it had guns. If we're just going to be direct, right? So I want to take what are the best aspects of our cultures and what are the best aspects of global culture. And that for me will be like my culture.
Woke. Okay. We we have just been taught. Interesting. it's a lot to think about. And I think what often happens with the music and just the creative space at large, media has a good way of portraying people in a particular way, right? We've got black people that are portrayed as self-entitled claimants, scroungers of the system. But you go to traffic lights, you go to downtown Joburg, or any township really, and they're the ones that are selling tomatoes and trying to start from the ground up and build. But as well, we've got artists like yourself and plenty of artists where we're only exposed to one facet of you. So people would tend to think that, okay, she's that girl that performs, has got a lot of energy, but does she really have substance? Until you sit down and actually have a conversation and actually realize that, hey, what you're seeing there is all art in motion. But it, you know, the story goes deeper than that. How are you taking fame now?
I'm enjoying the free stuff. I'm enjoying getting paid. I was broke for the most part of like all my travels. I was like hustling.
Okay.
Which had its benefits as well. Like I would have to be very resourceful and creative in how I could get to travel places. I like have sold clothes to be able to like get a plane ticket. My own clothes, that is. I've done so much. Taking a bus, you know, through borders, like bribing my way through borders and stuff because things are not legit. So it's cool to like actually have the resources to travel legitimately and also like I get to make a living while not having to like be in environments that I really like are not good for my soul. So like offices and stuff, I was very unhappy when I worked the only like office job that I ever had, which was like a couple of months. I was very unhappy and felt like I was dying slowly, you know. I commend people that can do that because it's a different kind of skill. You know, people are always admiring me, like, oh, I wish I could like rap and dance. And I'm like, you know, there's so much I can't do. Like I can't sit in an office. Like I can't be told what to do. And that's not I'm not saying that like it's a good thing.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, so I'm happy that I can like make a living doing stuff that I find really entertaining and cool. I like that.
How's the trip to London? Tell us about that. What happened there? What was the trip about? And
so I went as one of the mentors for the Nando's Music Exchange. Everybody knows I love Nando's, so that wasn't a big surprise to anybody.
Yeah.
But what was cool was to find out that they love me back, so that was nice. Then went there and basically ate Nando's for a week. No, I'm joking. I was mentoring some young musicians from various different countries, and they came together and each one made a song.
Okay.
And then on the last day, each one played their song for us. Each of the groups played their songs, and like, it was quite epic, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what are some of your take-homes from that experience?
I guess there are so many talented people out there. I am so many. And it really had me thinking, like, what is the difference between somebody who makes it and who doesn't make it? Because it's not talent. Let me tell you that. Like, sure. Talent is not the question.
Let's get into that, yeah?
Talent is not the thing that's going to determine whether you make it or not. It's one of the things that, if you have the other things, it's one of the things that will help you to make it. So many artists, yeah, there's so many talented artists, but people don't really have any idea about branding and positioning themselves and marketing themselves, really. Because at the end of the day, if you want to make it commercially anyway, sure, then you must see yourself as a brand, and people must be able to identify you as a brand. You can't be like a brand, but every day you look different. I mean, not everyone knows, these are the braids you will see me in.
Yes.
This is what you will see me wearing.
Sure.
This is what, like, this is a brand. You can't just, every day you're completely different. There's no, you know, there's nothing that we immediately think of when we hear your name, you know. People must really think of branding.
Do you have a dedicated team that takes care of all of that?
No, that would be me. Like, in terms of
for
branding
real?
And
even
stuff?
Like illustrations and everything that you put up. You're just curating everything in the background.
Definitely, like, I'm definitely like the creative director of everything that I do. I have help from my business partner Garth Von Glen, who shoots my videos, shoots my pictures, and draws like my logo, or you know, like designs my flyers and stuff like that. So we work very, very, very well together. But yeah, on a creative side, I mean, I don't have a manager.
Was that like a deliberate choice or?
No, not at all. I don't recommend this to anybody. I don't. Mara, I haven't found somebody that kind of like has the same direction and goals that I have.
Okay.
It's either people are like very locally focused, whereas sure, I want to be a global superstar. That's pretty much or I'll find people that are too international and forgetting the local market as
okay.
So I haven't found a good balance yet, and maybe it'll take a group of people and not just one person, right? For instance, like locally, even like the record labels that approached me and stuff don't care about Limpopo. They don't care about pushing me in Limpopo. Everyone's like, oh, we'll make you famous in Durban. I'm like, that's fine, but mina no ma Limpopo. And what, like, who's gonna help me do anything there? No one. Even the people that are talking Africa wide, they think now we're gonna break you in Nigeria, we're gonna break you in Lagos. I'm like, what about Tanzania?
Sure.
Like, you guys don't care about that market. And mina, I speak Swahili.
Mm.
So that market is very important to me. I also speak French, so the Francophone market is important to me. Côte d'Ivoire, you know, the Congo, like Burundi, places that no one thinks about. Everyone's like, oh, you have to break it in Nigeria and South Africa, and then you're good, you know. So I haven't found anyone that like understood that part. And then on an international scale, it's like, okay, we'll get you to tour Europe. And I know like a lot of South African artists that tour Europe
now,
but nobody knows them here.
Sheesh, okay.
That's what I'd also don't want.
Yeah.
If my core is not like, if my core fan base is not feeling me, I would feel so wrong to go to Europe and be like, hey guys, I'm doing X, Y, Z, but no one at home is feeling me. I feel there's something really wrong with that. Like, unless you've just been completely outright rejected at home, like, I get it. Like, I feel like people like, fuck, I have not gotten the recognition that they need here.
Yeah.
And that might be because of, like, homophobia here, mm-hmm. etc. But a lot of people don't even try to be big here and just go like straight, like aiming for that side, because there it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
As an African right now, it's easy to look exotic for them,
cash,
and then
yeah.
you dress up like this for
sure,
them, and
sure.
they're like, oh yeah, it's so exotic and different.
But
yeah, but at home no one feels you, so I don't want that either.
Okay, tell me this in terms of now. Looking at the future of Shoma Jozi, what's in the pipeline? What are you planning for the brand? What are you
so much that I also can't really even discuss at the moment. But so much exciting stuff. I'm blown away by how well even Huku has done. It's almost like it has this cult following of people that are just dedicated to it in a way that's beyond me and beyond like anything. And it's made me so proud, because it's the like. This song I released completely independently. Like, there was no one helping to push it, like, you know, like as far as a record label or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm feeling really happy and excited about that. So I just want to bring, you know, another single and then drop the
Take
album.
Oh, when is should we expect it this year or next year?
Definitely this year.
Oh, okay.
Drop the album.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And then
later
you know,
on this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then perform in the US. Perform a little bit in East Africa, come back, like do something really big for my home province.
Okay.
And then, yeah, start again next year.
Interesting. let's dabble a bit in into this quickly. You said there's plenty of other things that you need to have besides talent.
Oh, yeah.
To make it in this music industry. Let's talk a bit about that.
So I spoke a little bit about that, and I felt that it's the branding side. You have to think about, you know, being a brand. I think people really need to think about that. Like, what do people do when they're coming up with a new product?
Mm-hmm.
They think about, how am I going to package this product and stuff. So I think how you dress and how you look is important.
Mm-hmm.
As much as people like to act like, you know, oh, it's not about how you dress. It is. It's about how you look. This is your product. Even when you think about people that dressed in specific traditional attire,
mm-hmm.
it was so that people could look at you from far and say, that's a Tsonga person,
yeah.
or that's a Zulu person. So, like, clothing is branding. That's like how you identify yourself and
so
say, this is who I am. And if so, you can come, and if you're like a sexy rapper talking about like sex
mm-hmm.
and drugs and stuff, then you should probably dress very, very sexily and skimpily and like have red eyes all the time, you know? So people know you're really about it.
So from the Chitsonga regalia, why did you choose the Chipilani?
I just actually had a conversation with like Malom after I had recorded. I did 3 tracks on his album.
Okay.
And he was like, so what's your rapper name? And I'm like, I'm not a rapper, you know. He's like, well, you have to give me some kind of name, because
sure.
you know. And I'm like, you know, my issue is that now I can't be an artist, because I didn't intend to be an artist at all. I intended to be a ghostwriter.
Okay.
And write for other people.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I studied writing. I didn't study performance or anything. So I just said, like, I'm not a rapper. I don't look like one. I'm not interested in the things that rappers are interested in.
Sure.
I don't dress like one. I would rather wear Shibelani and be at the like street parties, Ashawela. There's a party called like Makwaya back home.
Okay.
Where basically each village takes a turn to host, and it's like Shibelani parties and like very loud sound system playing Shitsonga music and things like that. And sometimes it's like a competition, sometimes like other groups will come and dance and stuff like that. That for me is the most fun thing that a person can do. So I was like, that's what I'm interested in. I'm mm-hmm. not really that interested in like clubbing and stuff. Then he was like, well, you could still basically be that, and you still dress the way that you dress
you
when
dress,
you go
yeah.
to there. And so that's all that happened. It's not like I started wearing Shibelani because I you know, started making music as Shoma Jozi.
Sure.
I was always wearing that, and I was always going to those parties. In fact, the sad thing is now as Shoma Jozi, it's more difficult to go to them because now I'm not low-key. And
anymore,
like, I can't
yeah,
just,
yeah.
like, you know, go there and dance like crazy. But there are videos of me from back then that people have found. Like,
and keep sending you like
that will send them yeah because at that point I was just this random girl
sure.
dancing like Ashawela and stuff, and sometimes I go with my dad who's white, and so we definitely attract a lot of attention. It was like, how these two, and then we go there and
so
dance and then
dad?
Eat pap and
yeah.
chicken yeah.
yeah
and everything. Those are the vibes that we really enjoy and like, and so I just kind of brought those vibes to the mainstream.
Interesting. looking at your younger version, we always like to do this, I guess, mm-hmm. for interviews. What's your parting gift to the YRP listeners, I guess, and Cliff Central listeners?
With regard to the younger version of me?
Yeah, just your pearls. Just drop pearls, man.
I'm not very deep, I think. Like, I'm very practical. I like practical advice. So what I would say, which is what I always say, is use your social media. As an artist, put your work out there. I don't want to hear from an artist, like a designer, for instance, who's like, Shoma Josie, I want to design your clothes. Then I click on their Instagram, and there's not a single clothing that they've designed there. Like, what is wrong? Like, you know what
I mean?
I don't want to hear from a person that's like, yo, I'm a rapper. You click on their page, there's not a single rap that they've done.
Mm.
No, because what's the point? Like, so what must I do now? I must now email you, please send it to me, blah, blah. No, make yourself as visible as possible. That's where everybody found me, on Instagram.
Sure.
Okay, Malum Cool Cat, PSDJs, Maporisa, East Tembi, so even
sure,
my acting
sure,
gig.
Sure.
Like,
yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, really, you know, it's like that. Like, if you know, why would you hide yourself? It would take one click, right, for me to be like, I click on, someone's like, oh, I want to style you. I click on their page. There's not a single thing there. I immediately forget about you.
Sure.
Showcase your work. We have that opportunity that no other generation ever, ever had, mm-hmm. that we can, like, literally market ourselves. Use it.
So you'll be playing at Basha Festival?
Yes.
On the 28th?
Yes.
What can we expect from there?
I'll be doing the most. I think what people already know from me right now is that we bring the maximum energy to any performance that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, what I'm really enjoying is, because, like, I have been working on my album, so what I'm really enjoying is giving people tasters of some of what's in there.
Oh, okay.
And so far, it's been insane. So I'm really looking forward to giving people some new stuff and then giving them a little bit of what they know and love.
Mm-hmm. And you dropped merchandise as well. How do people buy that? Because I'm interested in getting a tea as well.
They're late.
Oh, really?
I dropped it and said it's limited edition. So it's done. And, like, I like that. So I only printed 150 of the Shoma Josie, like the hair salon poster t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I said it's limited edition and stuff. And so the whole point of it is that, you know, that's printed in 2018, so, you know, and like, I print them really, really good quality.
Sure.
And the limited edition t-shirts will be expensive, so forget about it if you're looking for, like, the cheaper one, right? It is expensive because
sure.
it will last. So, like, 10 years from now, I'll be able to be like, oh, those are the guys who are already, like, vibing with me in 2018.
Exactly.
And you'll be
okay.
able to say, I had this t-shirt I bought from Shoma
Josie.
Yeah,
so with the collection being done now, I'm sure
yeah.
I can get one of the first ones that you ever printed.
For the next run.
That you didn't put out. No, from the ones that you've
No, those
already
are finished.
Put out. Really?
Those are done. There's even people that still waiting for t-shirts. Now, those are finished.
So, when is the next round going to be? Then?
The next one's not going to be for you, really. I think the next one I'm making for children. Children's t-shirts. Because they love me. They love me more than you guys sometimes. I have strippers coming to me and being like, you know, at a strip club and being like, my daughter loves you. I'm like, wow, not you? What the hell? So, yeah, I need to do it for the kids.
Okay. And so, how do people get a hold of you then?
At Shoma Josie everywhere. Twitter, Instagram at Shoma Josie. It's ShomaDJozi.
Boom. Okay. Website's coming soon.
I only advertise my website when I'm selling t-shirts or whatever I'm selling on it.
Okay.
At the moment I'm not, but you can still check it out. ShomaJosie.com.
Okay. So I guess you've owned the voice. You've taken the voice back from the colonialists, and you're running with it.
I'm working on it. It's a process. Yeah.
Well, we'll look at you, and I guess we'll draw inspiration from you. I mean, Faga just made Donatella play Gorm.
Amazing.
At in Milan.
They're
and
so
I,
iconic.
Was,
I love them.
You know. Well, thank you so much for coming through and,
yes.
and hanging with us. We know we have a very hectic schedule and so much to do, but you took the time out.
Thank
really,
you, and big
really,
shout out to
really,
the listeners.
Really appreciate it.
Nice.
Awesome. So that was Shoma Josie. Follow the conversation on @CliffCentral.com and @SimplyBongani across all social media platforms. It was @ShomaJosie with Bongani Dao for the Youth Leadership Platform. For this week's show, it is good day and God bless. Signing out.
This is CliffCentral.com.